All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Nicole, from the Conservation Alliance. I had an opportunity to meet Nicole at the first ever Conservation Alliance Summit, where they included lots of outdoor companies and their funders to get together near Winter Park. And it was an incredible event where I had the opportunity to again meet Nicole. And she was so kind to share her time with us and join us in the interview for this interview. So welcome to the show today, Nicole.
Thank you so much, Reed. It was an honor to meet you, and I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation here for your larger Trip Outside community.
Yes, thank you so much. It was such an honor to be there because we were among some of these brands that we look up to so much, the North Face, Patagonia, Keen, and also some of our outfitter partners like Paragus Northwoods. And on the main heroes for us were, for me personally, were people like you and people like Sam at Save the Boundary Waters. And I was a bit starstruck because I feel like I got to meet all of my personal heroes that are working so hard to protect our outdoor places, our environment, and fighting every single day for conservation. So I had an awesome time there.
Great. I'm so glad you did. I'm looking forward to sharing a bit more about the Conservation Alliance and the summit and who we are. But yeah, it's an incredible community to be a part of.
So before we get into the Conservation Alliance, Nicole, I'm curious to see, I know you're a recent executive director there, which I think believe starting in December. But I would love to hear what you were doing before, how you found your way to the Conservation Alliance, and what your role is at the Conservation Alliance.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for asking that question. So I am currently based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So a little bit of your references around Paragus Northwoods and the Save the Boundary Waters campaign, just for listeners, get a sense of where I am. I grew up all over the U.S., started my roots in Park City, Utah, where I learned to ski at a young age, and then my family moved to the East Coast. And I really found my interest in the environment and the outdoors by high school, and ended up pursuing environmental studies as a major in college, and knew that I wanted to work in the environmental nonprofit sector after graduating college. And I was lucky enough to get my first job at the large conservation organization, the National Wildlife Federation, in their Great Lakes office, and spent a few years there before getting this incredible opportunity to be an executive director at the young age of 28 for a nonprofit called the Will Steger Foundation, now Climate Generation, that was started by a National Geographic Arctic explorer named Will Steger, who's from Minnesota. So I moved from Michigan at the time, where I'd gone to grad school, to Minnesota in 2006, nearly 17 years ago, to really translate Will's vision and concern around the issue of climate change and the lack of education and action. And I basically grew that organization from an idea to $2 million in revenue and 17 staff. And in 2022, felt that I had, you know, in a sense, taken that organization almost to college, if you will, as a metaphor. And it was time for me to do something else. And when I learned that the Conservation Alliance was hiring an executive director, I threw my hat in part because, you know, Will Steger had his early starts in the outdoor industry as sponsors of his big expeditions he did to the Arctic and Antarctic regions in the 90s, but also because the Conservation Alliance's recent priority campaign was to support the Save the Boundary Waters campaign to stop copper nickel mining. And I'm lucky enough to have roots here in northern Minnesota. My grandparents actually started one of the first canoe country outfitting businesses in Ely, Minnesota, the gateway to the Boundary Waters, right on the Canadian-Minnesota border. So I grew up going on canoe trips and cross-country skiing in the winter, and even learned about how a small family can make a lifestyle and a living through an incredible backyard and through outfitting. And I was really lucky to learn from my grandparents about the Boundary Waters. They were instrumental in protecting the area's wilderness in the 70s. And so I grew up in an environmental advocacy family, and it just really felt like a natural fit when I joined the Conservation Alliance in late October last year. So I've been here a little over 6 months now.
Wow, you have so much experience since, you know, ever since college. I really feel like you've been following your passion your whole career, which is so rare to find.
I was just going to say, I think that's the secret sauce, is when you find something that you really love doing and can make it your vocation and your career, it won't even feel like a career or a job, because you'll be doing what you love. And for me, you know, obviously, protecting wild places and outdoor spaces for everyone to enjoy is core. And when I think about my recent work, you know, in climate and our role that the Conservation Alliance plays in protecting large-scale landscapes, everything from close to home places to large landscapes like the Boundary Waters, we need them for climate stability, for biodiversity, for outdoor recreation, and all those other co-benefits that wild places and outdoor spaces provide us.
It's got to be easy to wake up and get to work every day. And then within the Conservation Alliance since October, what is the role as an executive director? Like, what is your day-to-day or your priorities versus the rest of the team?
Yeah, well, I think any nonprofit executive director would jokingly say no day looks alike. I love that aspect about the job, that your hats are, you wear several different hats. And a big portion of what I do is obviously working with our volunteer board of directors and supporting them with governance, strategy, fiduciary oversight, managing staff. So I oversee our Shorin, our VP of Public Affairs, our membership program run by Connor, and our operations and our grant making program. So I oversee quite a few staff and make sure that they have the resources and support that they need to do what they do. And then I, when I have the chance to represent the Conservation Alliance like this, that's a big portion of my job. But at the end of the day, it's really about building and nurturing relationships with our member companies, with our staff, with our grantees, and with our partners.
Got it. So you're just playing all parts, making sure the ship keeps sailing and that your whole team has everything they need.
Correct. Exactly.
And then for those of us that are not familiar, that are on the call, on the podcast, what is the Conservation Alliance in general? If you can share a bit about its purpose and mission and sure. How it's funded as well.
Yeah. So the mission of the Conservation Alliance is to harness the collective power of businesses and outdoor communities to both fund and advocate for the protection of North America's wild places. We really strive to have a planet where wild places, wildlife, and people thrive together. And we were started actually 34 years ago in 1989 by industry leaders from some of the core outdoor businesses you mentioned earlier, Patagonia, REI, North Face, and Kelty. And at the time, they started the Conservation Alliance to really increase outdoor industry support for conservation. They believed that cooperation among these competing businesses was essential and the way to make a more collective impact for conservation and for the places where, frankly, their consumers were recreating it, and recognizing that they really had a responsibility to give back. So it started with four well-known brands in the outdoor industry. Now today we have 270 member companies from the outdoor industry and associate businesses. And we've expanded to renewable energy and tech and finance and consumables and supply chain, as long as they share our values for protecting wild places. And doing that through our two levers are through grant making and advocacy. So any business can join the Conservation Alliance. Our membership dues start as low as $500 a year. If your revenue is under $1 million, and it grows up based on the revenue and the size of your company. And 100% of your membership dues goes into our grant making program. What started with a few hundred thousand dollars back in 89 in the early 90s has now grown to $2.2 million is what we're currently giving to grassroots conservation organizations around the country. So we have four ways that we run our grant making program, which I can dig into as one lever to impact change. And then our other lever is working directly with our member companies and giving them the tools and the resources to advocate on behalf of the places, the priority campaigns that we're working on behalf of. So We hear from a lot of our grantees that they appreciate the money and the financial support, but what really helps get their campaigns and projects over the finish line is the conversations that our business leaders can have with legislators and policymakers, making the business case for conservation and for these places, whether or not they are in their backyard or not. There's a really compelling story when a business leader can speak on behalf of a place.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the drivers to the economy matter a lot more. And
exactly,
a lot more focus gets put on jobs and how outdoor recreation and protecting our wild places can have a positive impact, not only on just the environment, obviously, but to the economy and the local communities. And I would love to actually expand more on how you fund the projects, not just fund it, but how you work with local organizations that are working to protect their areas.
Yeah.
So that, and then second, just if you can share some of your recent wins for conservation. I know you shared a lot of those last week, and it would be great to see how your funds that you raise get allocated to the local organizations and how they turn into wins that are happening recently.
Great. Those are really great questions. Well, I'll start by looking back at our history and just what we've accomplished in our 34 years. As of this year, we have collectively contributed, based on the generous support of our members, over $30 million to grassroots conservation groups, and we've helped protect more than 82 million acres of wildlands, 3,500 miles of river. We've stopped or removed 37 dams, and hopefully will be 38 later this year, and designated 5 marine reserves, as well as purchased 21 climbing areas. And how our grant making program works, our member companies who can join again at that $500 level and above based on their revenue, they have the opportunity through our member directed grant program to nominate up to 4 grassroots conservation organizations a year. So we have 2 cycles, the winter and summer, and each company can nominate 2 organizations. So a lot of times we learn about backyard groups and campaigns through our member companies. And in some instances, we build relationships on our own with our staff expertise with conservation organizations. And because of our understanding and landscape analysis of opportunities across the country, we're also able to identify organizations and match them with member companies. And our grant making program is really focused on supporting projects that seek to secure lasting and quantifiable protection of a wildland or waterway that engages, you know, citizen action, there's community support, there's an outdoor recreational benefit, and that there's a near-term timeline of success, ideally within 4 years. And we know that isn't always the case. I'll share that we've been funding some campaigns for, you know, 10 to 12 years before we see success. We're also really interested more recently in adding additional funding for organizations that have habitat benefit, that are indigenous-led, projects that benefit communities of color or underserved communities, and obviously also projects that can mitigate the impact of climate change. So some recent successes, you know, just in 2023 alone, we've protected over 11 million acres from the Tongass National Forest in Alaska and the Bristol Bay watershed, also in Alaska, all the way to the Castor Range in Texas. And in each of those examples, we've funded small grassroots community groups. So in the case of the Castor Range in Texas, we funded 2 local groups that are led by the Latina community, Frontier Land Alliance, and the Nuestra Tierra Conservation Project, both based in El Paso. This is a large urban area, and the Castor Range is the closest wild place and backyard recreational area that President Biden recently used the Antiquities Act to designate that as a national monument. So that's one example. Another, as I mentioned, in Alaska, the Tongass protected over 9 million acres. And in that project, we were supporting that for more than 10 years. And we funded 7 groups, everything from Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, which is a small organization, to Trout Unlimited and the Wilderness Society. So sometimes our funding is to larger organizations that have a grassroots campaign in partnership with local groups. But where possible, we try to fund the small grassroots conservation organization. And finally, another recent success that I'm obviously personally connected to was the 20-year mining ban on a mineral withdrawal in the Boundary Waters Canuary Wilderness here in northern Minnesota, which has been a 15-year fight. And we were thrilled to have the Department of Interior put a 20-year ban on mining. And of course, the campaign is ultimately focused on getting permanent protection of the Boundary Waters. And so now their strategy is both legislative in the state in Minnesota, as well as at the federal level. And in that case, we supported three local organizations, one in northeastern Minnesota and one called Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So focusing on both the sportsman community as well as the local community that includes several outfitters who depend on the Boundary Waters for tourism and their business.
Absolutely loved all of these stories. Again, hearing them again, it reminds me of, you know, all the effort that goes into protecting an area. And I actually think the Conservation Alliance plays such a great role of bringing different organizations together with a shared benefit that otherwise don't always have the opportunity to work together
to
drive these initiatives. I absolutely love that.
And right. And that can happen through our grant making and supporting and connecting grantees and organizations on the ground and connecting them with member companies who want to uplift the campaign through their own communication and social channels, or through bringing our grantee partner and our member companies to DC, where they get to interact firsthand and join together to advocate on behalf of that place.
I'm so excited to hopefully join one of those DC fly-ins one day. That was my biggest
takeaway.
I think this year we're going to be out of the country, but I think it's September, October every year.
It is. It's September. Yeah, it's usually in the fall. This year, it's September 18th through 20th. So anyone who's listening who is interested in joining as a small member company, any of your outfitters, or getting involved because you've got a grassroots campaign in your backyard that you want to see get funding for, those are definitely ways to get involved.
And I have to make one point about the Castor Range National Monument and how having a national monument and protecting a place drives that visibility nationally. I had, quite candidly, very little intention of ever going to El Paso. But now that I know that this Castor Range National Monument is there and it's protected and it just brings visibility to that area, I can just totally see how that drives the local economy and the people of that community benefit. Not only from having obviously natural places close by, but also visitation in rural communities and smaller communities that don't always get the tourist dollars that some of these like really massive outdoor recreation places do. So I love the fact that, you know, a small national monument win can and really bring in revenue from visitation and tourism in a great way and protect these places at the same time. So I know it's El Paso is now on my travel list.
Great. So, and I'm happy to share. There was a Washington Post story that did a piece on the three recent national monuments that President Biden designated and talked about the opportunity and timeline of the year to visit, the other being Abiquimé in Arizona, Castor Range in Texas. So huge opportunity, I agree, to raise awareness and drive support for these communities, as well as to give the communities the backyard access to places that provide, you know, sacred sites, recreation, mental health, and all those other benefits that these wild places provide.
Yeah, actually, that brings me to a great point that I wanted to ask you is, you know, why is it important to protect our wild places and outdoor spaces? What are the different benefits that you that we take for granted sometimes that you have to end up pitching to our government bodies to try to do that? You know, it seems like such a common sense thing. Obviously, you know, there's all these different lobbying parties involved that want to, you know, mine or do different things. But, you know, what are some of the facts that you guys use and bullet points or data that supports the importance for protecting our wild places and growing our outdoor spaces?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. Well, I'll just start with a personal answer. And my personal why is that wild places and outdoor spaces are so critical to spiritual and mental health. And for me, it's how I alleviate stress in my life. I mean, whether it's critical to spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being. When I think about planning my annual trip to the canoe country and having this incredible solitude and time away from technology, but also to be, you know, sometimes have my comfort zone pushed, to be challenged by, you know, lifting a canoe and portaging a heavy pack and dealing with bugs, all of that builds resilience and character. And so that to me is, you know, a personal reason. And then there are all of the ecological reasons for biodiversity, for climate resiliency and stability. You know, when I think about these two huge crises that we're facing today that for a lot of people feel overwhelming, knowing that all of these places, small and large, have a role to play when it comes to helping to build the adaptation and the resilience of our natural world, that, you know, the roles that they play in either storing carbon or like in the forest ecosystems, or the ability for us to have these natural buffers as we're adding more carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. So wild places play a critical role when it comes to these two major challenges, climate change and biodiversity loss. And we need natural places more than ever. I know that collectively protecting large scale landscapes can provide a reduction in 30% of our greenhouse gas emissions. So it's not just about transitioning our clean energy economy from a fossil to a clean energy one. We also need to preserve and conserve and restore these landscapes for climate, for a healthier future. So climate, biodiversity, mental and spiritual health and well-being. Obviously, we're interested in protecting these places for equity and access and ensuring that everyone can enjoy these places and these benefits. And then, you know, to the point you mentioned earlier, there's economic value and real economic stimulus from the outdoor recreation, from people that are buying the gear and going to these places, traveling to these destinations, that has a huge local impact. And I'm talking in the billions that goes into the outdoor recreation economy. So incredible benefits. And while folks may, you know, think, you know, why at the end of the day is it so important to protect these places with all these big issues that are facing us? And hopefully these are just a few of the many reasons that we need to be keeping these places and need to be adding more dots on the map and miles protected as our population continues to grow and we have more people in urban centers. We need these places even more.
Yeah, that's so well said. And, you know, our mission is really just getting people outside. And again, my personal belief around that is just it's good for my physical and mental health and what outdoor places and nature does for me. And we just want to share that with as many people as possible and make sure that people, doesn't matter where you are, if you're in a city or if you're in an outdoor place, you have access to getting outside and experiencing those benefits. The more we can share that, I think we can have a better society and a better climate, and all of our problems get better. So, you know, a lot of these things are
100%.
Kind of.
100%. Yeah, you know, and they're all interconnected in a way. Yeah. Exactly.
So where do you run into most of the challenges? Like, what are the fights that you have to fight? Like, who's your opposition most of the time? And and how does that, you know, it's got to be frustrating for you to try to have to even fight the fight for these incredible causes.
Yeah, you know, it's so hard to speak to any one opposition because I'll be honest, you know, in every place and local campaign, there might be a different pushback. So obviously in the case of Alaska and in the Boundary Waters where they were fighting an international mining company coming in, and that debate and conversation that's now going to be very much at the forefront as we continue to transition clean energy economy is where are we sourcing these minerals and metals that are needed for batteries and other technology related to clean energy. So in the case of the Boundary Waters, where, you know, we've got an international mining company coming in, that's a very obvious opponent. And then you've got sometimes entrenched identity. And in the case of Northern Minnesota, just because I can speak to this example personally, you've got a history of iron ore mining and an identity in many of these communities that can sometimes be as though it's a conflict with the recreational and outdoor kind of outfitting economy. So there's almost sometimes this narrative in communities like, you know, Ely and Grand Moraine that near the Boundary Waters between the historical iron ore mining and the, you know, descendants of families that have been doing that for generations and those that have been relying on the Boundary Waters and the wilderness right at their doorstep for their own business and livelihood. So in that case, you've got an international company that's a very clear opponent, and then you have your own neighbors and community and oftentimes a sense of identity that's entrenched. And so you're really dealing with educating them and exposing them to all of these other benefits and the economic value that the businesses. And sometimes, unfortunately, these conversations can also be framed as an either or, not an and. So in the case of the Boundary Waters, copper nickel mining is a very different extractive industry, and the impact to the watershed is far greater and deeper than, say, the iron ore mining that took place and, you know, really built up some of these communities. So I'll just be honest that in every community, the opposition is different. We're supporting and investing a lot in tribal-led conservation and helping to, you know, a lot of our work is lifting up the local community that and supporting their fight on the ground with whatever they need, whether it's resources or communications or the business muscle flexing in Washington. But opponents can look really different. And one piece that I'm really proud to say the Conservation Alliance is leaning into is that land and water conservation is a bipartisan issue, that we all need clean water and land for all the reasons we've already talked about. And so being an organization in a time of such intense polarization that really can cut through that and find common ground, it's almost rare. And some people might laugh thinking, does that even exist? And yet it does. And we want to be an organization that can be that bridge and be that business coalition for public lands and for land and water conservation.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. One, I think what you just said is it's a complicated issue, and that's why we need these organizations and the funding to really cut through and really get to, you know, international fights, local education, community change management, and all those things. So it's definitely very complicated, and thank you for doing all the hard work that you guys do. And two, I really love that you're really supporting the voice of the local community instead of coming in and not telling them what to do. Fighting the fight for them, you're really just supporting them in their fight to protect their communities. And that's really amazing. When you think about conservation and how an average person could get involved, what could an individual do? I know a lot of the conversation here is focused with businesses, and that's how you're funded. But as a local level, you have some tips and tricks on how an everyday person can think about protecting wild places, growing their outdoor spaces near them or places that are close to their heart.
Definitely, I'm sure there are local outfitters or, you know, many of our big brands like REI might have stores near you where they have outdoor activity. They're connecting folks to places in their backyard that you may not know about. I know Trip Outside does that, connects folks in urban areas with places in their backyard as well as destinations around the country. So finding organizations that speak to your interests and are challenged, you know, a new activity, something you'd like to explore. Obviously, in most communities, there are local organizations working to protect rivers, lakes, greenways, biking, you know, all sorts of interests, whatever it may be. I have no doubt that there's an organization working on behalf of that community or a local place that you can get involved in terms of volunteering or donating. When it comes to the Conservation Alliance and getting engaged, obviously I want to encourage your outfitter listeners and member companies to check us out and join. We're open to any business that shares our mission and values and wants to join us. And we're always looking to bring on more businesses under this tent so we can ultimately grow our grant making dollars and be able to give more back to organizations across the country. What else would I say? The other big thing is, you know, not to overlook all of the personal habits and behaviors that everyone has individually. You know, one of the biggest solutions to many of these issues is actually talking about what you care about. So in the case for me, you know, loving the Boundary Waters, I am not shy about talking about this place and my experiences and what it does. Or in the case of climate change, talking about what concerns me about it and what I'm doing to address it in my life. So having conversations about what you care about, connecting with others in your community through those conversations to join up, might provide opportunities that you didn't even realize existed.
Yes, thank you for those really incredible tips. I think sometimes these challenges feel so overwhelming that it's hard to get involved, but I think just doing small efforts at a local level is probably one of the best ways to get started, because you see, one, you see it's close to your heart and close to your place physically, so maybe it's easier to volunteer, get involved, and also just it's part of your community, so you can see those changes happen instead of maybe some of the national or bigger campaigns, which feel overwhelming.
Exactly. Yes.
Nicole, how do you stay motivated and not lose hope? Like, what keeps you going day after day when you hear these crazy news, like the EPA, is the Supreme Court taking away EPA's ability to protect wetlands recently? And, you know, every single day you wake up and there's some crazy news. Like, what keeps you motivated to keep fighting the conservation fight? That's a personal question that I'm really interested in learning more about.
Yeah, well, I will just say in general, I am a person that has always been optimistic and a glass half full. I really believe, I'll be honest, when things have been really tough politically in the last, you know, decade and even, that I've really relied on something that I like to call radical resilient hope. Hope that you have to work in, that you have to like find within yourself. So I'm definitely somebody that acknowledges that hope is an action. It's not just something that you're like, oh, I'm gonna, it requires actively choosing and believing in it. But I'm inspired because I know how many people care about these issues and these places. And that keeps me going for sure, is knowing that, you know, more people are on my side and with us and want us to do this work than don't. And that all of these blocks, you know, those big issues, like when the EPA, the Supreme Court makes a decision that rolls back a protection that we took for granted, just know that that big boulder that you're pushing up the hill, that sometimes it rolls back, you know, a few inches or several feet, but ultimately the larger movement is gaining momentum. And I do believe we're going to be able to push that boulder up the hill and that we're going to have those wins, and that you need to celebrate those wins when they happen. Take time to recognize and celebrate and then figure out what the next fight or the next challenge is. So I definitely get hope from knowing the larger community doing this work, knowing that, you know, setbacks are only setbacks and that there's larger wins ahead. And then, you know, I'd be remiss to say that a lot of what I do this work for is now I became a mom and 2 years ago, I have a young toddler and I can't wait to take her in a canoe and to show her all of these wild places that we're working to protect and that generations have done before us. And I can't think there of any reason that there is then, you know, whether you're a parent or not a parent, we want to leave behind these opportunities and these experiences and these places for future generations. And that for sure is, of course, a motivating factor as well.
I absolutely love that. And I'm feeling super motivated by seeing you and all of the people that are in the conservation fight. And one big thing that's really stuck with me after conversations with many different folks that have been doing this fight, including a lot of our outfitters in different areas.
Yeah.
We've interviewed on the podcast is that conservation is a never ending fight. The work is never going to be done. It's just something that you're always fighting for, whether, you know, the issues might change and the scale of that might change, but there's always going to be work to be done and it's never ending. So I think in a way it's overwhelming, but in a way it's helpful to know that it's not just, you know, you kind of have to just make it part of your life instead of just a
exactly
thing. Yeah.
And you have to control what you can control. You may not, you know, but I, you know, because we pulled the lever of advocacy, and at the summit, you heard this, you know, this event where we convened our member companies to educate them about the issues, land and water conservation, to meet with other businesses who care. I mean, it's through that community that you feel emboldened. But we also heard from some of our federal decision makers. And you know what one of their big pieces of advice was? Ask for a meeting. Come talk to us. We're not, and part of what we do is trying to break down what might feel like an intimidating conversation. But, you know, wherever you are, there are decision makers at the city council, the mayor, your local representative or senator, your governor, you know, all the way to your congressional, and they all need to hear from you about places that you care about and issues that matter. And those conversations, you'll find you'll leave, some may be disappointing, but more often than not, I guarantee you'll leave feeling like, wow, what I did there is going to have an impact. Maybe not right now, but it will tomorrow.
Long term, yeah. So those of you listening, if you see an email with the call out for action and advocacy, and we'll be sharing off the petitions and action items that we come across in our email newsletters. We, as a company, realized last week, and you know, just donating is not enough. Just being part of these organizations was not enough. That we need to make advocacy more of an action and share with our users important issues that are coming up and how they can get involved. So we're going to continue to do that going forward and really build that in more into our platform, because one, personally, I like to know what I can get involved in locally, nationally. And once we find that information, we just want to make sure that we can share that with all of our users, because it's sometimes difficult to find all of the information, and hopefully we can help in that way as well. Finally, I feel just so honored to be part of this group, to be able to do anything that we can do as individuals, as a company. Is there anything that I missed, Nicole, that you'd like to add or leave us with? And then finally, where can people find you, your different channels, website, if you can share all that information, and we'll make sure we include that in all the show notes as well.
Well, thanks for this conversation, Reid. It was really fun to continue it. I enjoyed meeting you in person. And, you know, I think that, you know, with the last few years of the pandemic, I'm just reminded again and again how powerful it is to be in community with others to do this work. And I encourage you to visit conservationalliance.com. We're on Instagram and LinkedIn and on the web, and learn more about us there.
Thank you. And if you're an outfitter, please, please consider joining the Conservation Alliance. We'll be sending links and information on how you can do that. And we hope to see you at the next summit together. And thank you so much for your time today, Nicole. I hope you have an awesome weekend and get outside this weekend.
Thanks, Reid. I plan to, and you too.
All right. Take care. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Trip Outside podcast. If you enjoyed the conversation, let us know in the comments on Apple Podcasts. Share it with your friends and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, if you felt inspired to travel, you can support the show by booking your next trip on tripoutside.com, the easiest way to book human-powered outdoor adventures.